This project starts from my saying that I stopped being part of Southwark in 2001 at the end of it. And I came to the conclusion that I was only going to talk about the Elephant and Castle up to the year 2001, which means that some of you in the room know a great deal more about the current project than I do. In fact, most of you do. And I made a policy decision, if I have personal policies, that I was not going to get engaged in it. And I really have not followed the Elephant and Castle from that time. It may seem odd that I'm speaking about it, but my intention, therefore, is to go through the early stages of a project and to perhaps be more direct than, say, a mayor of a city can be or a paid official, now that I am not one of those, about what made the project happen and some of the good things and some of the bad things, because no one can get angry with me. It's politics, buildings, and places. And I'm going to talk rather more about the politics because I think that's one of the rather interesting things. It sometimes gets overlooked. It's slightly strange, but there's been a change of terms. We had improvements we started with. Then we had rehabilitation of estates with specific buildings being improved. That didn't work, so the government changed it to redevelopment, which was slightly larger areas. And when that failed, they decided they were going to call it urban renewal. And when that failed, they decided they were going to call it regeneration. It's about time that the government's got to come up with a new word, because regeneration isn't working either. The OECD, ever helpfully, said that they had been reviewing regeneration projects around the world, and they had not found a single one which had succeeded totally. Some of them had done it only partially, but none of them had done everything they wanted. They then wrote me a letter saying that they would be delighted to assess the London Borough of Southwark's regeneration program, and for a modest £30,000, they would go through and tell us where we had gone wrong. I spoke to the councillors, and they decided that that was a resistible offer. Southwark. We now forget that the institution and this building were not around in 2000. It started in that year, and before that time, it was an even stranger amalgamation of 33 authorities. And in fact, as the Director of Regeneration and Environment, I was responsible for airport policy as it pertained to the London Borough of Southwark. And it was this most extraordinary bit. And what people, most other local authorities, did not realize, it meant that no one could stop you from doing anything you wanted to do. So that many of the things which happened in Southwark were to do with this very strange bit which no longer is there. Now, if the GLA says that the policy for developing London is going this way, you've got to follow it. But when there wasn't anyone to tell you which direction to go, you could set off in whatever romp you could get away with. But by 1998, regeneration in the London Borough of Southwark was well underway. In April 1994, the Tate announced its intention to reuse the former Bankside Power Station as its new gallery. I have to say that made a great deal of credibility for regeneration. In September 1994, the rather more serious project in Peckham was agreed with the largest single regeneration budget funding ever given to a project in the UK. But by 1998, the Bankside hadn't opened. The Tate had assessed that it was going to add £25 million of additional value, but it was no real proof that that was going to be the case. Why there was an eagerness about this is that the consultation with people about the Bankside had gone very well. And I'm sorry that Nick left before this, but it's truly extraordinary that the Tate went along to the first meeting. And we advised them not to say, you know, would you like the Tate to move in? Because if they'd said no, we would have said yes anyways. What we said was, how can the Tate be a good neighbor? And the local residents, after thinking about this a bit, said, we'd like a park. And the Tate thought and said, all right, we'll see there's a park. And then they said, we don't want car parking. And the Tate took a rather longer time to think about that, but they actually did respond to what local residents said. So there was this burst of confidence about the fact that regeneration could make a difference within Southwark. Of course, any regeneration program, and someone actually said that a regeneration program absolutely must include government funding, but they are dependent upon government funding, whether it's a central element or not. And we had to play off the things about where we could go for our next regeneration project. What we were really thinking about then is, where should we go after the Bankside, a huge success? What should we do after Peckham, which we won't talk about, and see what we would focus on? And the suggestion was that we would deal with the Elephant and Castle. I don't need to tell you very much about it. I'm going to show you one slide at the end to give you an impression of what it is, to show that I'm really trying to understand this social side of the thing and the art of social things and politics as much as it is buildings. We had, therefore, an area of need, which is very clear, but we also had an area of opportunity. When people's perception changes, you see that the elephant and castle is really a brilliantly located area. But the poor image of the area was as much of a disadvantage as the actual bad buildings that were around and the bad sort of situations that we found. 1998 is also an important year in the calendar of Southwark, as it was up for local elections. And what it meant was that there was going to be a four-year romp before anyone had to go back and be re-elected. And at the local political level, this matters. One of the ward councillors for this area had a majority of less than 10 votes in that 1998 election. I can now reveal that well before the 1998 election, which was in May, we had done some work to find out that there were at least two consortia in London which would bid if we put out an offer, that there was a demand for the space that was there, that the government would write programs that would allow us to get some money to come into it. So we had put in place, in a quiet and informal way, all of the things that meant that there would not be a complete failure if the councillors decided to do it. And at the first meeting after the election, we then introduced the Elephant and Castle as the theme for the new party. And I then went back to July 1998, the first meeting that they had at the council, and I extracted from that some of the things which I did finger-waving at the new enthusiastic councillors of things which I found that were important factors, which I subsequently suggested the Elephant and Castle was a solution to. Making really important things, the future of London's economy rests with the global economy, the future of Southwark's economy rests with the economy of London. These were things that needed to be said. This was the one that really got them thinking, take advantage of Southwark's locations. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? But to think of ourselves as expanding, to be a part of an expanded central London, is a very important thing. And I pause at this point to say that we had also slightly embarrassed central government at this stage to remind them that they had allocated £70 million of money in this area in Lambeth and Southwark and had no coherent plan of how they were going to fit that together, what it was going to lead to, or anything else. They were very enthusiastic about doing a project which was called South Central, which showed that it all fitted together and that, of course, they had always intended this to be a synoptic view. But continue on with what I said in July to the new councillors. I then took a deep breath and read this out. Frank Field at that time was a sort of shadow secretary of Social Security. And he said, paid work is the surest escape route from poverty. It gives people more than just money. It boosts self-esteem for the individual, provides a role model for the family, and gives communities a weapon against social exclusion. I think, you know, the thing about it is that jobs are the way that you get out of poverty. At the same time, the Treasury came up with an absolutely wonderful statement that one-third of the households in Britain get out of poverty by someone getting a job. Another third of them got out of poverty by getting an increase in the job they had. They didn't tell us what they did the other third with, but that if you were going to get out of poverty, it wasn't ameliorating it. It was going to be dedicated and directed towards how people were going to get into employment. And if you go back and look at the single regeneration budget bid for the Elephant and Castle, it had an energetic program of seeing that people would be moved from poverty, moved from unemployment into employment. The second part of this, which is great fun, was poverty is the link between all of those things. It's not tied to any single type of tenancy, no, but after unemployment, the strongest correlation is between education achievement and tenure. And this is where they started throwing things at me. This is a chart which shows the achievements of educational GCSE results, A to C, going up. And along the side is the percentage of social housing. Is there a correlation? Alarmingly, yes. This is something where Southwark, which has a very large percentage of subsidized housing, as we should call it, has real problems, and that they could not really face up to the fact that there might be some correlation which needed to be dealt with. 60% social housing, 6,000 new tenancies a year. There are 6,000 decisions each year in Southwark in 1998 about who was going to live where, what they were going to do with their conditions for their housing. If we didn't deal with these things, any hope that just a physical regeneration program was going to solve the problem was misspent. This just reminds people that they had a lot of housing, but not the most. Tower Hamlets, bless their souls, had more. This is what Robin Wales, brave man he was, in September 1997 said, but basically said, yeah, we'll do our bit about social housing, but we're not going to completely get carried away with it. And he carried the day and was still a Labour representative at the time. I've mentioned this, that we picked the areas of opportunity and needs and where they existed. I was also reminded, and the council is 100% correct, that in the regeneration statement, we said the council's first obligation is to meet immediate needs, but reacting is not enough, and they also take a longer-term view to aim for sustainable regeneration, and I still to this day don't know what that word means. That was the end of what I said in 1998. So I come to this little plan. What was the idea for the elephant in castle? Well, you can't quite see. See if I can make this work. There's the river, which goes like that. We're here. And the plan was, Bankside, also unfortunately the Tate's just off the map there. The plan was that we'd been fairly successful in there. Lambeth was thinking about things in here. If you did this bit in here, the Elephant and Castle project was all of that. And the important point was that this wasn't planned. If you did a really strong center there, and you had the river, which is automatically a good effect, this space in between is infinitely more expandable, developable, without being a major project. And that this was the trick to change the perception and hopefully the idea of this so that the whole area changed. Right, how long? If I had told the councillors in 1998 that it was going to take longer than the 4 years that they were up for, they probably wouldn't have done it. We did in 2000 get a really very good study from Ernst & Young, and they did some comparisons to our dear councillors of how long it took for some projects, and here I won't read them out for avoiding embarrassment, but I'll just take the White City. In February 1989, Balfour Beatty Consortium applied for planning permission. In April 1990, planning permission was granted for 1.3 million square feet. In December 1993, Godfrey Bradman came onto the scene, was leading a consortium. The construction was going to begin in 1994. September 1995, Chelsfield joins Bradman and is the confident the scheme will start in January 1996. I won't go on. But it takes a very long time. It is not a matter of failure that these projects don't get done as quickly as that. It is just the reality of dealing with the complex issues. But you have to start at some place, and that's what I think is the justification. We pause to reflect on what the future is going to hold because we don't know, but I'm going to make a little defense at the end. This is the aerial view of the shopping center at the Elephant and Castle. It's disguising most of the bad housing in the area. I think this is one of, and here's the absolutely wonderful road which goes through the center. Incidentally, that thing there is a memorial to Alfred Fleming? No, who is it? Anyways, there's a memorial to someone. Who is it? Alexander Fleming. And we won't go into this. But this is an area which is not great. I think it justifies doing a major redevelopment here. But the form that major redevelopment takes is a really interesting question. And my hope is that the Elephant and Castle will actually be something where the physical response is more directly linked to the kinds of social programs that one might like to see in the area, rather than the physical response, believing that it can resolve and reduce the social problems which they found at the beginning. And I'll stop there.